This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'll be reading from A Field, Portraits of Wisconsin Naturalists, Empowering Leopold's Legacy, Volume 1, by Sumner Madison. I've read many times about many people from this great book. It is available on Amazon and published by Little Creek Press in Mineral Point, Wisconsin. It was published in 2020, and Sumner assures me that he is working on the much-anticipated Volume 2. Thank you so much, Sumner, for this decades of work you have given us. Last week was Part 1 about George Knutson. This week, the second part of Chapter 3. George Knutson was a fascinating naturalist born in 1922 near Easton, Wisconsin. In fact, very near John Muir's childhood home. He says of that close link to Muir, "Maybe his spirit jumped into me when I jumped out. I like to think that his spirit remained in those sandy lands and in some way helped influence my love for nature." This interview with Knutson was done in 1984. In this part, we will hear about people as varied as Fred and Fran Hammerstrom to Frank Lloyd Wright. He will mention his great teachers, among them Aldo Leopold, Norman Fassett, who wrote The Grasses of Wisconsin, a very easy-to-understand guide to our grasses, and John T. Curtis, author of The Vegetation of Wisconsin, another true must-read book, and very readable. They were professors at UW-Madison, legends here in Wisconsin, and George Knutson certainly is among their ranks in our Wisconsin legacy of great naturalists. To start, I will reread a paragraph about the work his father did. By the mid-1930s, father had sold most of his businesses in the Dells. From about 1935 to 1940, he was the project manager for the Resettlement Administration, a federal program headquartered in Black River Falls. He was the chief honcho. The program goal was to buy farms on the sterile sands of Jackson, Juneau, and Monroe counties, put the farmers on better farms, and convert the sandy lands to forest and wildlife production. He and the feds were responsible for buying up all that land that is now the Black River State Forest, the Central Wisconsin Conservation Area, and the Nisida National Wildlife Refuge. He did a lot of work to get the whole area set up, but he never got any credit for it. And he goes on, "My father was very supportive. He always bragged to people, 'You know, George could walk from Black River Falls to Nisida and back and tell you everything between here and there.' It was really embarrassing, but kind of fun at that. Dad was wrong, of course. One of my dad's first biologists was Fred Hammerstrom. He and his wife, Fran, worked mostly in the Nisida area, conducting surveys on otters, beavers, and game birds. I didn't get to know them very well at that time. I do, however, remember Dad being very much impressed by that young couple. Since Dad was trying to convert land to game land and had game men working for him, one of his counsels was none other than Aldo Leopold. I met Aldo a number of times in the office. He'd come up on occasion. I don't know how many times he came up, but Dad and the game men would confer with him. I got to know Aldo then. I can remember when we had him out for dinner, and one time in particular, when I showed him my insect collection, he was flabbergasted. Young kids like this with an insect collection, and they were mounted perfectly. I was always very meticulous about things, and he couldn't get over that. The next time he came up, he said, 'George, get out the insects.' We sat down on the davenport, and the next thing you know, we're on the floor with boxes all around, and he was pointing, asking, 'What's this? What's that?' One thing about Aldo, if he didn't know, he would never say, 'Oh, yes, marvelous collection, I see.' He'd always ask you if he didn't know the name of the critter. He never acted as if he were the know-it-all professor. He was just a great, great man. Once he told me, 'George, you should go into economic entomology.' 'What the heck is economic entomology. He told me about Professor Charles Fluke, who was the chief entomologist at the UW-Madison at that time. He said, "I'm going to tell Charles Fluke about this collection. We had a turkey farm at the time in the summer of 1940. One day a car drives up, and if it ain't old Professor Fluke," he said, "well, I just happened to be up in this country, and Aldo Leopold told me about your insect collection and that you'd be a good candidate for economic entomologist. That's what I had in mind when I started at the university in 1941. I went for a year and took the fundamental courses for an agriculture major. Then I went into the Army for 3 years. One night, while on guard duty in England, where I had become interested in birds and English natural history, I remember thinking, well, economic entomology is great, but I love insects, reptiles, birds, mammals, and geology. I wondered about wildlife management. So I wrote a letter to Aldo Leopold. I told him I had more of a naturalist bent and asked him if I could get into wildlife management when I returned. He wrote back, sure, he said. So I swung into that. I had to major in zoology first, but I took several undergraduate courses in wildlife, including Leopold's courses. I remember once that he argued with me on a gray catbird record that I had. It's a little early, George. I said, I know it is, but I saw it. Are you sure it was a catbird? Yes. It was just an early catbird. So anyhow, taking all the courses under him worked out real fine. When we went into the field, I was always his bug man. If he saw a bug out there, he'd say, hey, George, what's this bug? Aldo was a good field person, but he admitted he wasn't able to identify everything. Game management and forestry were his fortes. Leopold was not forceful in his teachings. He was so sincere and interested that one couldn't help but learn from him. On class field trips, we'd sometimes sit down and he would encourage dialogue, not monopolize the conversation or upstage anyone. I remember going up to the shack. We'd walk and talk, and we'd go into the pine plantation. We helped him plant pines there one weekend. I remember there was a red-shouldered hawk's nest in one of those pine trees. I climbed up and found 3 hawks. Leopold thought that was pretty nice to have old George climb up a tree. It was kind of a free-for-all type walk, and we'd talk and look. He didn't do a lot of lecturing. It was just a casual hike. Years later, I came up and found a ribbon snake near the river. This is one of Wisconsin's rarest snakes. It was one of the only places I recorded them. I don't know if the population is still there or not. Professor Fluke was much like Leopold in his sincerity and teaching methods. When I came down in 1941 to study under him, he said, George, this lab is open any time to you. The insect collection is open to you. If you want to compare specimens, it's there. By the way, under this shelf over there, you'll see that little key. That's the key to my microscope. You use mine. I also studied under Norman Fassett, John Curtis, and Lowell Noland. Fassett was a little live wire. I'm not sure if he hated zoology majors, but he loved his plants, naturally, and every time he talked to us zoology majors, he'd have something choice to say about us and our wigglewerps. He always called animals wigglewerps. In the field, he was all business, and he didn't engage in conversation much. Curtis was the hardest to get to know. I got along pretty good with him because he knew I had quite a broad background, but I didn't have anywhere near the feeling for him that I had for Fluke and Leopold. I loved Noland, zoology professor. He was another professor that was really soft-spoken and easygoing. His lectures would just flow from one to another. I've always been more field-oriented than book-oriented. Many naturalists develop their first interest in nature study by reading, then by observing and studying in the field. I started in exactly the opposite way, which in my opinion is more rewarding and stimulating. I can recall a number of times coming up with things that I later learned were wildlife principles. For example, on our turkey farm, we had kestrels on telephone wires. I remember those kestrels diving down to get nice big grasshoppers, and I'm thinking, It's a lucky thing there are a lot of grasshoppers around because these little rascals may otherwise take birds. I later learned that the grasshopper, an abundant species, is what's called a buffer species. It protects the birds by serving as a ready and available prey source. And I later learned about carrying capacity, reproductive potential, symbiosis, and endangered species. And I'm going to interrupt this and say that this year we have kestrels that we pay close attention to. And because of all the rain, the grasshopper population is almost zero. I don't know if you've noticed that, but there just aren't many around. And that's a big problem for young kestrels that are just trying to learn to hunt. Grasshoppers sort of give them their eye-hand coordination and hunting skills early on. Back to George Knutson. As I mentioned earlier, my fascination with wildlife and wildlife principles swung me into wildlife management, not as an undergrad. I received my bachelor's in zoology, but as a graduate student. I took a number of good courses with Joe Hickey and Bob McCabe. Then the opportunity to work on beavers came along, and I thought I would develop a master's thesis. The conservation department hired me to do a little beaver study. Well, it got to the point where it turned into quite a project because of beaver trout, beaver forestry, and beaver wildlife controversies. It developed into a steady job. I worked on beaver intensively for 8 years, and I wasn't about to quit and go back to writing a master's thesis. All the final reports I did were scientifically written, and I would have satisfied the requirements for a number of master's degrees. I studied every phase of the beaver's life history, conducted habitat surveys, determined food preferences, and documented the size of beaver ponds. To determine reproductive potential, I gathered carcasses from the trappers. I dissected over 1,600 beaver carcasses to learn the number of pregnant females in the population, the average size of the litter, age, structure, and when they started breeding. I looked at beaver damage, beaver trapping pressure, beaver harvests, and beaver movement rates. It was a complete study of the whole beaver situation from the standpoint of life history, ecology, and distribution. And from that data, I fought like hell for a very long season because I knew their tremendous reproductive capacity would keep them going as long as we didn't over-trap them. So I fought for lenient seasons. To make a long story short, we needn't worry about the beaver being wiped out by trappers. We now have a tremendous number of beaver in Wisconsin. One of my longest and most intensive studies entailed observation of 353 beaver ponds to ascertain their effects on other wildlife, trout, forests, and agriculture. This study led me to the conclusion that the beaver is actually a wildlife manager whose changing of the habitat in and around beaver pond is unmatched by any other species of animal. They are true ecologists. One beaver pond I saw led to a brief encounter with Frank Lloyd Wright way back in 1953 or 54. A little creek came out of his pond, went across Highway C and under the Wisconsin River by the bridge. I wanted to walk down to that pond and see what the beaver was feeding on, so I went up to Frank Lloyd's house and knocked on the door. A servant came to the door, and I told him I was with the conservation department and wanted to see the beaver pond. He said he had to see the master. So he saw the master, and lo and behold, here comes Frank Lloyd Wright. "So you're with the WCD," he said. "Let's go up on the veranda." So we went up there and had a 2.5-hour talk. He loved nature. I told him many things about natural history that he didn't know. I told him about the big outbreak of cicadas that was due in a couple of years, the 17-year cicada cycle. He said, "Yes, I remember them from the last time. That was a long time ago. I remember the noise they made." We kicked around a lot of words that afternoon, had some lemonade, talked about beaver, talked about my interests. He definitely incorporated his interests in nature and into his work. He was a real organic architect. I conducted research on beaver, bear, and otter during the years 1950 through 1962. I studied the three species in all parts of their range because the DNR wanted to obtain as much information as possible for future management purposes. I put in very long hours, often starting at 5 or 6 in the morning and finishing at dusk. The work on black bear occurred from 1958 to 1962. At the time, we didn't know much about our black bear population. I was asked if I wanted to switch over to studies on them for a year or two. I said yes. As with all research projects, when you don't know that much about a species, you study every aspect you can. So I plunged ahead with a status survey, a range survey, and a study on food habits. And I will continue next week with part three of this wonderful interview with George Knutson about his work and his life.
From the Book of Field by Sumner Madison.
This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.